The following program contains views and opinions that do not necessarily reflect those of KMRE staff or of the Spark Museum of Electrical Invention.
You are tuned to Cascadia News Now. I am Stephanie Contours, and Tim Johnson and Dave Willingham have the night off. Actually, we kicked them out because it's International Women's Day tomorrow. So we are joined tonight by some of the many powerful women's voices we have in Whatcom County. I am honored to have with me, sharing the mic, women activists and voices, Rosalinda Guillen, Liz Darrow, Melora Christensen, and Catherine Chambers, and we are going to talk about many aspects of International Women's Day and themes and issues, and whatever I have planned will probably get derailed because that's how we roll. Whatever issues are important to the women in this room is what's going to happen. That being said, I do want to say a question has arisen with me and maybe some of the younger generation, not exclusively, but some people question with challenging gender binary, challenging the idea that there are just two genders, is a Women's Day or an International Women's Day still important? And Liz, you brought up an excellent point before the show that the Women's March or Women's March that happened in 2017 and 2018, some people did not feel included by that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is one angle, and I don't know if you noticed it, a lot of women's marches made room for that, because I think that if you're going to, whenever you find a space that is accommodating and flexible and ready to innovate, it's usually led by women. So I celebrate International Women's Day because I love working with women, having women mentors, and being encouraged to sort of think outside of the box. So being a person who does identify as a she, hers, I recognize that as a privilege. But I also think that being transparent and welcoming and flexible is part of what women-led movements are about. So I think that it can be inclusionary, and I hope that that's true for people who identify otherwise.
And I want to point out, I'm going to be a little assumptive for a moment, but there isn't anyone at the table tonight that represents the position that they don't feel included by an International Women's Day. The women who are here are very passionate and have a historical connection. I would like to invite you, if that is something that you feel or something you want to talk about, to weigh in on our Facebook page, CascadiaNewsNow.com, or our website. We would love to welcome all dialogue. But the women in this room, particularly Rosalinda and Catherine Chambers, I'm going to ask you both, because you both have a strong connection with International Women's Day in this town, is it important and why?
Yes, it's still very important to have an International Women's Day because women's issues are still not really in the forefront of people's thinking and the way we address problems is still very much focused on a paternalistic viewpoint. And so I think that as we move forward, the women's movement has to continue to accept challenges and rise to those challenges. And but I just think it's still really important that we focus on those issues that are issues that impact women everywhere.
So, I mean, I wanted to say that Catherine and I, as everybody knows because I say it all the time, Community to Community was founded as an intentionally women-led organization. And we put that out from the very beginning. Because we did that, and I'm so vocal about it, as a woman of color in Bellingham, it was important to me that people know what we were about. And so because of that, I think a lot of women approached C2C about International Women's Day, Catherine being one of them, that this organization is supposed to be women-led, and it is women-led. Why don't we partner in forming and organizing International Women's Day events? So C2C from, I believe, like 2005 or even
We did 7 years.
Yeah, 7 years mm-hmm. of organizing International Women's Day events. And we did many different types of events, you know, gatherings, celebrations. We had marches. We had all sorts of events inviting the women of Bellingham to participate with us. And they did. I think that they were very successful events. They were celebratory. Mm-hmm. They definitely were not, what do you call it, gender...
Exclusive.
Yeah, right. We had many transgender women participating, mm-hmm. LGBT women. We had men, you know, mm-hmm. LGBT men participated. It was a beautiful events. It grew quite a bit with many participating. And in women of color, I think that was one of the key focal points of community to community during those years is bringing women of color in. We gave awards. We had beautiful sashes that we all wore. We were divas and queens. Everybody dressed up. It was really fun. But a lot of the farm worker women participated. You know, working women participated. It was really a beautiful event. I think that the steam ran out of it because it was just so much organizing and it got really big. And then nothing happened once we stopped. There was just no longer that recognition. I think for us at C2C, because I'm a farm worker and we were including people, women of color and people of color in general, we also had a strong labor component to it. That we were all working women. That, you know, we were working women and we ate. And so food sovereignty, right. You know, racial justice, and you know, decent labor conditions and working conditions for women were central to the organizing of the event. So I think the other thing I wanted to mention is that, and we mentioned this earlier today, in 1908, International Women's Day began in the United States. We can actually claim that. We researched it. I thought it came from Europe or somewhere, like Paris or... No, in the United States in 1908, a group of garment workers actually led a huge march fighting for women's workplace rights because they were dying in the workplace, literally. Mm-hmm. And so Women's Day in the United States started as a political action by women to defend their rights, to defend themselves against patriarchy, actually, and capitalism, working them like they were animals. So to me, that's really important to remember that history of how it started and understand that we're all evolving in the current political moment. And I just want to also mention that, you know what, Catherine, you know, whatever we call it, we're women fighting together and looking for a better world for our children in the future. But let's just remember what's happening on a national level. Our very own president, the way he treats women, the way our political leaders treat women, mm-hmm. there is like a disconnect between some of the, you know, what I would call, you know, this whole gender binary issues and the beautiful world that we want to create and that the patriarchy is still very, very strong. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they have developed a political structure that is keeping us in certain boxes. And instead of focusing on each other about what we call it, let's focus on the real enemy here, which is patriarchy, white supremacy, and capitalism.
Melora, I wanted to give you a chance to weigh in if this is an issue you'd like to weigh in on.
Sure. Well, I mean, Rosalinda, it's so good to hear you talk about this. I think that, you know, when you think about feminism and the roots of women standing up and speaking out in a culture that is controlled by patriarchy and capitalism, it has always been about moving ourselves outside of those boxes. And so when you think about the feminist movement or speaking about women today, like, we are in a new place. And mm-hmm. if we are not able to change and accept that and
That's right.
and challenge the status quo that we're talking about today, which is, you know, there's so much changing. There's so much more information. Women are speaking up in a way they never have before. You know, young people are speaking up in a way they never have before. And all of that, you know, if we don't change, and I think feminism and women have always been at that cusp of saying and understanding that You know, if they aren't at that edge, that it's not going to work. The change is where we become relevant. It's where their transformation is. It's where we're going. Mm-hmm. And so I just think that it's exciting to see that it's not stagnant, that, you know, we're being pushed. And it's been an interesting time the last 10 years, but especially the last year, you know. And it's what's coming out of that is more radical than I thought I would see at this time in my life. I thought I would wait another 20 years to hear women speak as radically as they're speaking right now.
So, Melora, based on what you said and what Rosalinda said, let's not beat around the bush. Let's look at the administration, the administration that's running this country. We have had a huge resurgence of women coming out into the streets with the women's marches. We had the Me Too movement, which I am sure that we will talk about in more depth. And recently, Liz Darrow and I spoke with the powerful young student leaders, Mehar Singh and Maggie Davis Bauer, who led the student walk out after the shooting in Florida. I'm going to make sure nobody has any rotten fruit in their hands. Is it possible that Donald Trump is good for us in terms of the movement because of the changes that are happening with the NRA, with the sexist behavior in Hollywood?
In terms of accelerating the process, because I do believe that in order for us to get to a truly equitable society, we have to tear the whole thing down. I mean, I think that we have been living behind a veil for a long time and thinking that the prior administration was good for us, when really, for most intents and purposes, it was furthering capitalist interests. It wasn't about the people. So I think a society that is truly built by the people has to sort of start from the ground, from the grassroots, from your neighborhood, your neighbors. And in that way, I can see how this climate, there isn't any other way to go. You know, it isn't going to be, I don't believe that we can recover from this and look back on it and say it wasn't that bad. I mean, I think personally and economically and politically, I mean, just on all fronts, it's a living nightmare for a lot of people. So, but I don't want to glorify it, because there are people who I care about and there are people all across the country whose lives are truly being ruined by this. So looking as far as the timeline goes, hopefully we'll get our revolution sooner rather than later. But in the meantime, I feel, you know, just standing in solidarity with people who have so much to lose, I wish that it hadn't had to come to this. And I think it's probably going to get a whole lot worse, particularly for women and obviously people living in poverty and people of color. I mean, they have to fight this fight and always have. And so it's too much of a, it doesn't feel right to say that this is a good thing, but I do see that we're now moving more quickly toward a different structure.
But what I wonder about is, even though we're having to face these things, is that really going to cause be the start of a cultural change? Because many years ago, when there was upheaval, it didn't really cause the cultural norms to change.
And can I ask you just to spell out a little bit which
so
many
what
years
I mean
ago?
Is the harassment, the men's attitudes. Obviously, those things have not changed over the last 50 years. In fact, probably we've gone backwards in that. But the reason why I question whether it's a good thing or not is because I wonder if that doesn't just reinforce those values that are being projected by this administration.
Well, I think that we're at a pivotal point in this country, because it's a perfect intersection, what's happening right now in this political climate. And the reason, you know, when the Me Too movement and all of the things happening to women, like Liz was saying, women of color have been living with this nonstop. Mm-hmm. The poverty, the racism, the imbalance of power for our people has never really, it leveled off, but it never ended. The cultural norms, like Catherine was saying, never changed. So for us, it's not a surprise. Mm-hmm. You know, it's nothing new. What's new is that white women are actually speaking up. When before they were so comfortable, mm-hmm. we had to literally, you know, scratch the wall to try to get anybody to pay attention to what was happening to us. And, you know, and it's the same with poor people and people in poverty. So the pivotal moment right now is, what are the real changes that are going to happen? Trump's behavior and other men, white men like him that are in power now, didn't just happen by chance. It's been building. And people have not been listening, and to the voices of those of us, to black people and women of color, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
There's something wrong. It's fundamental, and the changes are not happening, and they're not being addressed. So I think it's a question that's up in the air for us, for women of color. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually steeling ourselves for the worst, which the
right.
worst is that a true fascist structure get put into place because men, the white, patriarchal, capitalist, rich men, could have enough power to say,
mm-hmm.
we're never going to let them do this to us again. We will now take control
yes.
so that it can yeah. never happen again. And, you know, when you have comments like Donald Trump saying that he believes that being a permanent president is a good thing, just like the Chinese, you know, premier is doing, that's something the United States should try, and nobody really challenges him on it. That's a clear signal. And who is going to get hurt first? It's going to be us. It's going to be women of color. It's going to mm-hmm. be poor women. It's working women. We're going to go down first.
Yeah.
And then everybody's going to come after. But, you know, I mean, it is an important moment. And I really am impressed and applaud all of the young people that are insisting in these changes, societal changes that need to happen. But I also think that those of us that are older, that understand community organizing and the way to create permanent, sustainable movements, they don't know how to do that. Even now I see the young folks from Florida and the high school students that were so strong. Where is all of that now? It's only been, what, a few weeks? There have been no legislative changes on gun control. The NRA is moving quickly to shut that all down. And from my perspective, it's being handled very, very well. And no real changes are being made. To me, I see this as a pattern. Fascism is moving quickly. And what are we going to do? I mean, we're a bit late.
Well, one of the things I think that is so crucial that you bring up is we've talked about our nation and our leadership, but that this man is one of several in a global perspective, that we're not isolated. As much as they want us to be isolated, we're not isolated. And the fascist steps that are being taken here are not just being taken here. I mean, we have scary, scary things happening in the world. When you look at the Philippines, and you look at Syria, and you look at several places. And of course, as we come back to, it is women. It's women of color and women all over the world that stand to lose the most from fascism. I remember reading recently that in the steps to becoming a fascist, that Trump has taken every single
That's
one.
Right.
When he talked
yes.
about, except for one,
it's
he's
classic,
taken every
classic.
Single one. When he talked about having a military parade, that was right down the line. The one thing he has not yet done is put on a military uniform, but everything else.
Yep. And let's bring it home. Because a white patriarchy in Whatcom County and in the city council is almost modeling what's happening at the national level. Right?
Explain.
I'm explaining that by the way that Michelle Vendiola is being persecuted by the prosecutor here. The fact that we have a prosecutor that's been in office for, what, 44 years mm-hmm. or something like that?
35, I think.
35?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just
yeah.
like unheard of. I mean, isn't that almost like a...
Well,
call
it,
you could like a dictatorship?
Okay, yeah.
Explain
yeah.
who Michelle is and explain
Michelle
the
Vendiola
situation.
Michelle Vendiola is a water protector... Mm-hmm. that is being persecuted by the county prosecutor for an action that was taken on the freeway. And in my opinion, the way that she has been targeted and treated is very much exclusive, I think, to a woman of color.
Yes.
The fact that this city council would not take a position supporting the supporting the ending the deportation of undocumented families and refuse to address the fact that one of the major leaders that lives here in Bellingham, Maru Mora Villalpando, would not say a word of support for her, right? I mean, it just goes down the line over and over again that these administrations at the local level are almost mirroring the administrations at the federal level.
And Maru Moro Vilpanda has been targeted by ICE for deportation.
Yes.
And she is one of the loudest voices for women and immigrants, specifically having to do with Tacoma and the very private geo-run Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma.
You know, and that's why I think that, you know, people become desensitized to this information because they're hearing it all the time and they don't think it's so bad after a while. They just think of it as the norm. And, you know, I think one of our biggest issues is the connection with men and violence and how that plays out in the military, how that plays out in relationships, how that plays out in terms of power between men and women and men governing. It's really an issue, and it continues to be reinforced in so many different ways.
Well, I mean, look at the policemen, that three policemen in 3 years, the Bellingham Police Department,
right,
that have
right.
been charged with, you know, spousal abuse and literally violence. It's like, just because you wear a police uniform doesn't give you the right to do that. There's a culture, Catherine, there's a culture that we have to undo. But before we can undo it, we have to recognize you can't talk about the administration in Washington, D.C. or some other places. Let's look here at home, what's happening here locally. Mm-hmm. And then let's act together as women, Women X, you know, all of us together.
So when we talk about what's happening locally, I think some of it's hard to unpack because everything's connected. But let's talk about abuse. Let's talk about abuse of women for a moment. And Rosalinda, I worked at WomenCare, the woman shelter that is no longer exists. Back in the 90s, we were protecting women from officers. So absolutely, that kind of abuse of power is everywhere. Is the Me Too movement, which started with Harvey Weinstein and after years and decades of silence, more and more women are coming forward and making a difference. Is that something that is hopeful, or is it a flash in the pan?
It's difficult to address it, like I said before, because it's been happening to us for a long time. I think it's a question of power, right? All of these men that have been... the women that complain about it are men that have incredible power. But let's look at power all the way down the line. I mean, all the way from the supervisor on the factory line to the supervisor in the fields to the boss in the office. All of these, it's this thing about a culture that we've established in the United States where power is very hierarchical, it's very clear, and it fits into the whole capitalist system of having to survive, having to keep your wages to survive. So it's a huge, huge issue. I think on International Women's Day, those are some of the things we need to discuss at the local level. Like, what is the power structure locally?
And I think as women, we need to talk about those things together. We have to challenge one another because having been someone that was involved in a sexual harassment case, there are definitions for harassment that don't necessarily fit an inappropriate comment. Inappropriate comments are different than sexual harassment. Sexual harassment is a pattern of behavior that when you're challenged, you continue to do that behavior. And so that's why I mean that for women, we have to talk about that, because is that going to, the people who are filing complaints for inappropriate behavior, how is that going to play out for us as women And what responsibility does do men have to start speaking up and challenging inappropriate behavior?
Well, I think that men have a lot more responsibility than they've ever been willing to take, and that is part of the problem. I mean, there's like a learned helplessness that is this brotherhood that is pretty impenetrable. And so I think what the Me Too movement did for a lot of people is it validated, you know, what you're experiencing isn't okay just because you've experienced it your whole life, and the men will continue to get away with it. So I think as looking at a sisterhood, I think us being there for each other and saying, you know, just because it's always happened and just because they keep doing it doesn't mean that it's okay. And that's maybe the first step. And I think that standing up for Michelle and Maru locally, it's political action, it's feminist action, it's also, you know, and like Rosalinda said, they're not surprised. We're not surprised that women of color are the first to go, but I think that the strong thing as women that we can do for each other is say, that's not okay. And that hopefully will get the ball rolling in one way.
And last night, Liz, you were at the Billingham Racial Justice Coalition meeting, and I know some things were talked about, how we can support Michelle Vindiola right now, how we can support Marumora Villalpando right now. Does anybody want to kind of share that with our audience?
Well, the one thing that's always needed, obviously, is financial support. I know for Michelle, it's not just for her personally, it's for everybody who is being persecuted politically and in the justice system locally here. There's a YouCaring account for that, and you can find that Red Lion Salish Sea on the youcaring.com. Really, legal
and
help.
Let me just say, that is Y-O-U caring, right. Not the letter U.
Yes. and there are petitions online for Maru, and I think she's really close, if not having surpassed the number of signatures needed to get some legislative steps taken, but that can be found on the Northwest Detention Center Resistance, or Mi Gente. That petition is there. And what else?
I think the most important part that a thing that needs to happen is the political behavior of people needs to change locally. You know, she lives here. She's a resident of Bellingham, has been for several years. And the fact that our elected political leaders have opted from supporting her, who is a hero and an organizer and a leader in the immigrant community, sends a really clear signal to the entire community of Latinos and immigrants in Whatcom County. You simply don't care. This means nothing to you. We are nothing. We're not even acknowledged. And that is horrible when you look at all of the state, even the governor made a statement, right? Then the Human Rights Commission made a statement. The United Nations sent a statement. Mayors from other cities have written statements in support of Maru. And they didn't have to call and ask, gee, what do I write? What letter do I write in support of Maru, right? They did it out of their heart. Mm-hmm. We've got city council people saying, well, I would write a letter, but I really don't know what to write in it. It's really, really? You can't figure out what to say? You can look at any website.
Like you knew what to say when you were running for office.
Exactly. No, I mean, when you have so many doing it without being asked, without being told in these beautiful, heartfelt letters that explain a very clear position on human rights, on moral authority for protecting these families, not separating families. Our own elected political leaders silence. And then when they do something, it's like, well, you know, I don't know what to do. Our process is so slow. It's like, really? I'm just astounded.
Well, and I think what some of what we're talking around is the fact that Bellingham passed an ordinance that is supposed to be somewhat about sanctuary, but has not taken a stand as to being a sanctuary city, where Seattle was able to be a sanctuary city. Governor Inslee has talked about pro-sanctuary, that it's not unusual in the state of Washington that sanctuary is something that we take a strong stand on. And as we know, in California this week,
today
and this week, that they are coming, and the administration's coming after the state of California because of their sanctuary
That's
programs.
Right.
I just want to take a moment and remind you, you are listening to Cascadia News Now. And this is KMRE 102.3 FM Bellingham and 102.5 KAVZ Deming Van Zandt, and now also on KMRE.org and KPNW.org. /D/DB. And while I have us just pause to do a quick ID, Rosalinda has been talking just recently, but she's also talked this morning because her show, Community Voz, also focused on International Women's Day, and they focus particularly on ecofeminism. So we're not going to talk about it as much tonight, but I do really want you to listen. Community Voz is such a powerful show, and it really is women and people of color led. And we don't have that anywhere else. We don't have that anywhere else in the county on radio or on television or on a newspaper. And so please tune in, KMRE, Community Voice. You can hear the show Saturday at noon on ecofeminism, Sunday at 8 a.m. and Thursday at 7 a.m. Again, that's Saturday at noon, Sunday at 8 a.m. and Thursday at 7 a.m. We've spent a full half hour talking about the problem. We could spend another probably 20,000 billion hours talking about the problem, but because it's International Women's Day and we're starting to talk about strength and coming together, I'd really like to spend some time talking about ways that that can happen. And Melora, not to put you on the spot, but you haven't had a chance to talk in a while, so I'm curious to know what your perspective is.
Well, I mean, just Rosalinda, not to focus on the problem, but, you know, talking about just the culture in Bellingham and Whatcom County, you know, it's this pervasive feeling that we're doing progressive things and that this is a progressive place to live. And yet middle class white culture is what is, it's not only mainstream, it's what the establishment is going to protect. And you see that in our politicians, you see that in the inability to really do anything that looks radical or collaborative. And I think it's all, I find it to be masked by this feeling that we're doing progressive work and that we're this great place to live where it's beautiful and we have great schools and, you know, our children are playing together. And at the same time, we are not dealing with some really, really big issues within our community. We're not willing to talk about it. We're not, you know, and when we do, it's too abrasive. It's too aggressive. And I think that that time we need to move away from that, and we need to collaborate on a level. I mean, I think movements and social change movements have become so strong, and yet they've really had to silo themselves in order to do what they want to do. And that idea of intersectionality and being able to, I mean, any women's movement when something is being led by women and women of color and poor people, like, you are going to have an inclusive movement.
Yeah. Well, I think Whatcom County is rife with well-meaning white people. And that was particularly clear after the freeway incident when it was the last sort of gasp before we just had no hope left with the pipeline in South Dakota, North Dakota. And Maru and some people, including myself, were on that freeway. And the outcry, if you can call it that, from well-meaning white people about how it's okay to have an opinion if you do it politely.
Right. Exactly.
And if your hands are folded in your lap and if you kind of obey the subduedness of how we're supposed to talk mm-hmm. about everything. And yet everything that you're talking about tonight, it's exasperating. And having your hands folded politely isn't waking up the people who need to be woken up.
Well, I mean, in this country, it has always been, for many, many years, hundreds of years, it has been a tradition to fight for lots of things. The labor movement, the 1960s, and changing, there was a huge paradigm shift in the 1960s, culturally and politically, because young people were very strong and very fierce. I mean, it was, you know, traditionally, this country has been known, that's why it's called a democratic country. It's been known as a place where people can do that. First Amendment rights and be able to voice dissent and opinion. And also there have been clashes and backlashes against that, right? But people have traditionally done that. And over the years, I think, for people of color, we've had to be stronger about it. Because when we do speak nicely When we do engage in the process, we're ignored, we're ridiculed, we're pushed aside, mm-hmm. we're marginalized. It yeah. doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's not that we don't know the process. We know what the process is. The white patriarchy and the power structure chooses to ignore. They choose to push us aside. So that makes us have to push harder. And I think women have done that throughout time, too, in the United States. When, you know, to get the vote, to be able to work and earn the same. Women in the United States still don't earn the same wages as men do. What do we have to do? What has to happen? Certainly, from what I've seen, politeness doesn't work. It doesn't get us anywhere. It doesn't create the changes that we need to have a better life and to have opportunities.
I think you're absolutely right. As you were talking, I'm thinking, right, the suffragette movement, Alamo, Texas, the Civil War, slavery was not ended by anybody having their hands folded and saying, can you please end slavery? Why, in fact, our very nation was founded on rebellion.
That's right.
Exactly. And so who gets to turn around and say, no, now we have to, right?
So what does it mean, though, that, you know, we have, what, 55% of voter turnout in Whatcom County and even less, you know, across the country?
And that's an example of good turnout.
Yes. Yeah. And so what does that mean that women, I mean, like, we're so disconnected from our history. I think of my mom and, you know, the suffragette movement, she doesn't know it. She doesn't, you know, she doesn't connect that to what it means to be able to vote. And we're doing such a disservice as a democracy, as a nation, to not understand what it took to have this ability to create change. And I find it, until that changes, until we have, you know, all of us showing up, speaking out, like, how is that ever going to change?
Well, and I think at the same time, it always blows me away when well-meaning white people, in quotes, will talk about C2C and like, oh, they're so divisive. They're so argumentative. And it's like, I have never had that experience, you know? Like, I've never been told, we don't have time for you. You're not welcome here. It's always like, we brought these snacks. Let's have a meeting, you know? Let's talk about the issues. It's intersectional. It's welcoming. And so I think it is because it's women of color led.
That's right.
That in Bellingham, there has entirely been you know, literally marginalized, but it's like, oh, there isn't any credibility there because where are the white men in suits? Like, where's the power coming from? And it's confusing to our, you know, Bellingham is very white centric and people, I think, are afraid to admit that. But I would encourage people to just really, before dismissing a woman of color led organization as divisive, just really think about that is it. It's an act of love to take to the freeway and try to save the environment. It's an act of love to work with undocumented people who are losing their families and their homes. And so it's the opposite, really, of divisive. You know, the hand-folding and the silence is what I see as incredible violence, and that divides us. But what the women at C2C do and what the water protectors do and these incredible women that we know who are working for justice, it's for all of us. It's not just for them. So it's like the opposite of selfish. So I think what we need to do is just figure out how we can join in and strengthen that movement rather than looking down our noses at like, well, did you try this and did you try that? Because I'm pretty sure they've tried it. They've been around a long time.
Well, we've been around, you know, this is our 15th anniversary. We have been in Bellingham as an organization for 15 years. And, you know, the fact, I don't know of any other social justice organization led totally by women of color north of Seattle, and even in Seattle, there's not that many. On a national level, to have such powerful women of color's voices like Maru, Junga Subedar, Michelle Vendiola, and myself in one place, in one city, in one county, who we know the we have done the analysis, we have done a racial analysis, the economic analysis, the class analysis. We know where we are. We're in the deep north in a highly discriminatory space, and we choose to stay here and say the truth about where we're at. This is our home. I think also that if you immigrants know the history of struggle in this country probably better than a lot of other folks, because we came here with a promise of the opportunity for a better life based on the history of struggle of this country. And so when I challenge, I literally look to past challenges that white people of the labor movement is one of those. What the labor movement did to form unions, to have the 8-hour day, to have all of these benefits that people from all over the world want to come, right? The decent wages, which is being destroyed now. Thousands of workers were mowed down by the old style submachine guns because they were organizing. I have examples and I will use them, right? And I'm just shocked at the fact that whenever a woman of color like myself speaks truth to power in a strong voice, which I do, then I'm thought of as divisive and, you know, I don't know the process. And it's like, yes, I do know the process. And I know it doesn't work for us, but I'm willing to work with you to fix it. I don't know what greater love there is than that to a country or to a place, you know, and I own it. I own this flag. It is mine. This is my home and I will be part of it. So I don't know what else to say.
You are listening to Cascadia News Now. That was Rosalinda Guillen. Also here, Catherine Chambers, Liz Darrow, and Melora Christensen. I think it's really important to back up because the phrase Deep North, I know the Racial Justice Coalition is using it. I know that you're using it. I know it's being used more and more for supposed progressive, happy Bellingham. What the heck is that?
Well, everybody talks about the Deep South and the structured racism that has been built for generations to contain black people in their place. When we examine ourselves as women of color and people of color, we recognize the same structure here, but it's subdued. Mm-hmm. And we have learned, many of us, to fit with it, to be courteous about it. Courteous racism is what we encounter all the time.
Yes,
and so absolutely. We challenge white people to understand what they're doing for your own good. It can't be good for a white person to be racist because that's a bad thing spiritually inside that harms everybody. But you're harming us externally by denying us opportunity, by calling us divisive and non-collaborative when we speak our truth, when nobody else does that if you're white. If you're white, then, you know, you have the conversation, right? It's very clear to us. So that's why we call it the Deep North, because the history also here proves the Ku Klux Klan and eugenics, the leaders of mm-hmm. eugenics came yeah. out of Whatcom County. This has a deep, deep history of white supremacy that we also have to recognize. So, I mean, there's many, many reasons for that. I think that when you're talking about, you know, this being International Women's Day and all of that discussion, is think about the fact that it is women of color, women X, bringing this out. Only if you want something done, yeah. you know, what do they say?
Exactly.
So here we are, take it for what it is, and we're proud to be speaking truth to power because we deserve better.
Well, I think when people hear Rosalinda Guillen, oh, she's divisive, or when people see Michelle Vindeal or read about her in a newspaper, how many people have even met her? I think one of the things that you're really speaking to is when people have this impression, how many of them have been to a C2C meeting? How many of them have been to a Racial Justice Coalition meeting? How many people are even curious to challenge their own notions or challenge what mainstream media is putting out and how mainstream media is framing everyone?
I think, too, there's this belief that that there's not enough to go around, and that if we share by bringing other people up, that somehow we're going to lose something. And that's a really hard thing to work within, that kind of that scarcity model, that there's just not enough. So we have to have more in order for this to work. And both men and women, I think, have a fear of being too comfortable and not wanting to be in that place where other people are, taking that chance that they might end up in that same situation. And it's part of this culture that exists here in the United States, and it gets reinforced all the time. You lose everything, you know, and so people fight to protect that.
Well, what you're hitting on right now, that is the core of that, is something that could be its own ongoing show. It's huge. And we'll talk a little bit more about that on Cascadia News Now right after this.
Community to Community Development is your local grassroots organization led by women, people of color, and farm workers.
Comunidad a Comunidad es su organización local de base que es liderada por mujeres, personas de color, y campesinos.
If you care about the food that you eat and having a fair and sustainable food system, you should partner with us.
Si le importa la comida que comemos y quiere mejorar el sistema alimentario, debería juntarse con nosotros.
You can call us at 360-738-0893 or you can find us on the Facebook.
Puede comunicarse con nosotros por teléfono 360-738-0893 o encontrarnos en nuestra página de Facebook.
You are tuned to Cascadia News Now. I am Stephanie Contours. In the studio with me, I'm honored to be sharing the mic with Rosalind Yen, Liz Darrow, Melora Christensen, and Catherine Chambers, and we have talked, just scratched the surface on everything that's wrong with the entire world and patriarchy and power and white people. So we have about 10 minutes left, and let's be a little solution focused. What are some good steps? Melora, I'll throw it to you.
Well, I work in housing, and so we provide at Catholic Community Services, we do permanent supportive housing for adults that have been chronically homeless and unhoused. And it's interesting because there's a lot of really good movement and grassroots movement here locally that people who have not had housing or have been right at the cusp of losing housing, really coming forward and asking for what they want and engaging with the city. And again, you know, a lot of critique on that it's been divisive and that it's been too aggressive. And I think it's very interesting when there's ever voices that are contradicting this other good work, right? And so I work for an establishment, which is we're providing housing for adults, and I'm very proud of the work that we do. But I think that it's deemed as a radical because we're loving people. We're saying you belong. And that somehow that, you know, flies in the face of this other an entitlement society that says you have to deserve this. And I mean, the thing that I hear more often than not is, okay, well, so how soon after people get housing in your program do they have to have a job? You know? And I always think, well, that's such an interesting question. Mm-hmm. You know, if that's, sure, sometimes, maybe, but what an interesting thing, because for me, and I think when we ask our community members, do they want people to die on the streets? Do they want people to not have a home? And the answer is no. I mean, if you really ask them that, we all want that for each other. We want our neighbors to be safe. We want ourselves to be safe. And so I think a solution is just we have to start talking about love, and we have to start talking about acceptance. And when we think that we can fix something with a pill or with, you know, substances or a program, that we're missing the point. And so I know for me, I just feel like women don't shy away from talking about love, you know. And yet when we professionalize and we talk about these things, we don't want to use that word, but that's actually what we need.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just going to say, relating it back to what I was talking about the scarcity, because I've had a lot of discussions about housing. And it's not just a fluke that all over the country, there's a housing problem. But when somebody has a house, they've paid for this house, they own that house, what is their part in wanting to get 2, 3, 4, 500% of a profit when they sell the house? And how does that impact this struggle, this movement, that we don't have enough affordable housing? That is a part that plays into that. But it's a classist perspective that people don't want to deal with.
Yeah.
You know, well, I own this house, I deserve to somehow make a very good killing when I sell that house. But how does it impact our neighbors and our neighborhoods? And
methinks you were talking about ADUs. You're just hinting a little bit about accessory dwelling units and neighborhood character and what's behind preserving neighborhood character, which is another discussion.
Sure.
However, coming up this Monday, City Council, it is on the agenda, and I encourage anybody listening to follow.
And you know, we got to remember how, as a class, women have been discriminated against. They haven't made as much money, and these things all impact women considerably more. You know, and as we age, there's a lot of stuff that happens around discrimination to women as they get older, because of the way our culture is focused on younger women in particular, and looking a certain way, and all of that. So,
I wanted to just say that in spite of all of the speaking truth to power and addressing some very clear discriminatory issues on all kinds of arenas for community to community, we actually have worked really hard with lots of groups in Whatcom County. We're part of the Whatcom Food Network. I was on the board of the Bellingham Community Food Co-op. I've, you know, been part of the Whatcom County Health Department's health plan, trying to develop better health plan for low-income communities and farm workers. I've worked with the Whatcom Community Foundation and trying to find ways to provide opportunities for farm workers. I've worked with Greg Winters in housing around farm worker housing.
He's the head of the Opportunity Council.
Right now, but he was part of this housing group. And I want to say that we as an organization have tried, and we have collaborated, and we have participated in many, many advisory groups and working groups. Our goal always has been to have a food sovereignty system, to have a food system where farm workers have equity and an equal opportunity along with everybody on health, on housing, on wages. We have tried. We have brought solutions to the table. Environmental solutions are protecting the water table from pesticides, trying to provide our own accountability so that we don't need help from anybody else. So it's not true that we're divisive and we don't collaborate. It's not true. You can find our name down the years since 2004 as we have attempted and collaborated and worked with city leaders in trying to improve conditions. And we didn't make hardly any headway. We're still part of the Whatcom Food Network. We're still trying to change the food system. Mm-hmm. It's not that we're not trying to do it in the way that everybody looks for us to do it. What we're saying is that the white patriarchal structure has put barriers in our ability to try to create these legislative changes, cultural changes, and bring opportunities to farm workers in Whatcom County, which is the number one raspberry-producing county in the nation. So the agricultural industry plays a big role, which means we need to play a big role. And we're just saying the truth to people. And you don't like it, then don't ask the farm worker to the table to speak.
And for those who may not be clued in to the work or to the details of what you're talking about, when you say obstacles have been put in front of your progress, can you throw out a couple examples?
Well, the biggest obstacle is just that all our solutions are not doable. They cost too much. Or I guess obstacles is not the right word for Whatcom County. Marginalization is the right word, not being asked back to the table, or just being at the table as a token. right? Mm-hmm. Saying the same thing over and over and over again and nothing changes. Mm-hmm. I remove myself from that position as a token. And when I do that, then I'm not collaborating and I'm not cooperating, right? And so then, you know, when I go to my community and my community demands action, especially against racial profiling, then I speak really strongly, then I become divisive, right? I mean, it's like this circle that goes around and around. We've been here for 15 years, and I can sit down. You have 6 hours. I'll go through each and every loop that we have been put through, both structurally, politically, economically. It goes on and on. So people, we're still here. And, you know, a lot of you may say, why? What? Because this is my home, mm-hmm. right? Right. Mm-hmm.
People forget that. We have only 1 minute left. I can't believe it. Please all come back maybe next week. Liz, you're involved in so many things. What's your maybe summary of positive, hopeful action?
Well, I love what Catherine had to say about scarcity. And one of the things that I do is I'm a filmmaker. And in my work life, whenever I work with women, I never feel like there's a fear of ownership of creativity. Mm-hmm. Like, we can all create things and it all comes out different and complementary, mm-hmm. rather than wanting to keep the skills to ourselves. And mm-hmm. so I think a paradigm shift away from scarcity and fear and into a more, we can build on each other's skills. We can share our garden spaces. We can share our homes. We can share a lot of things that we have that make the community richer, rather than worrying about each person for themselves. And that's the mm-hmm. joy that I get out of the women mentors that I am lucky to work with at C2C, and also in my job whenever I'm fortunate to work with women, because there is no shortage of creativity and positive building each other up in that way.
Liz Darrow, Rosalinda Guillen, Catherine Chambers, Melora Christensen, thank you so much for this riveting dialogue, which is not long enough, so hopefully you will all come back at least once. This conversation did not begin tonight, and it certainly can't end tonight. We didn't talk about many things, including I wanted to bring up what got talked about last night at the Racial Justice Coalition about shared economy and maybe working outside of the system as well as within it. You'll just have to tune in mm-hmm. to future episodes. This has been Cascadia News Now. I'm Stephanie Contours. Huge thanks to our women engineers tonight, Alex Ward and Carrie Lewis. Devlin Sweeney did help. Yay for an all-woman show. It's not the most important thing in the world, but how we think about these issues is framed by who's talking about them. That's why community radio is important. Please do not let mainstream media be the only voice. Support KMRE. Go to savekmre.org. You're listening to Cascadia News Now on KAVZ 102.5 in Deming Van Zandt and KMRE 102.3 FM in Bellingham.